Now, the first of several election scene setters we're going to bring you, the backdrop to the politicking you'll be enduring in the coming weeks. Immigration policy, of course, will feature. The Prime Minister jumped the gun and announced his policy a couple of weeks ago. ScoMo said immigration levels would be capped and more new arrivals would be directed to spend longer in the regions. Meanwhile, a major shift has been going on in Australian immigration policy over the past decade or so. We're increasingly using temporary migrants for labour, often very cheap labour. But that's not always the stated goal of the government, but that is the result. I'd like to welcome Joanna Howe to the program. Joanna is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Adelaide, and she's done extensive research on migrant workers. And a warm welcome to Abel Rizvi. He's a former Deputy Secretary of the Department of Immigration who's now doing a PhD on it. That's immigration, not the department. Just before we get into immigration patterns, I understand the budget has you hopping mad, Abel.
Well, yes, Philip. Looking at the budget papers, I always turn my attention to the assumption of population growth. And more often than not, that tends to turn out to be a fairly boring exercise because from year to year, there's not much change. This year, however, I was very surprised to see a very substantial increase in the assumed level of population growth. The assumed level is increased from 1.6% per annum to 1.75% per annum. Now, you might think, well, that's not a big deal. But in fact, if you look at it over 10 years, as the government is encouraging us to do, that is a very substantial increase, and it is clearly inconsistent with the population plan the Prime Minister issued just a month ago, which indicated that he was looking to reduce immigration in order to put it in his words, bust congestion. So I can't work out how to reconcile those two positions.
How do you interpret this paradoxical positioning?
I think, and I feel some sympathy for my former colleagues in the Department of Treasury in this, they were confronted with two conflicting objectives from the Prime Minister. One was that he wanted economic growth to be strong, and he wants economic growth to be so strong that he can create 1.25 million jobs over the next 5 years, as he has pledged to do. At the same time, they were informed by the Prime Minister that he wanted lower immigration in order to bust congestion. The two are inconsistent. You can have one or the other, you can't have both.
So Treasury has bent to his will in a sense. I suppose it's the only way to get to that surplus.
Exactly. And in order to get this to the surplus for 10 years, you do need a very high level of immigration. The other thing I should point out is in the assumed level of population growth, not only does Treasury assume a substantial jump in net migration, but they also assume a very substantial jump in the total fertility rate. Apparently, according to the government, Australian women are going to start having babies at a much, much more rapid rate, and indeed at a fertility rate significantly higher than most major developed nations.
Well, we know that if Labor's in government, fertility rates immediately drop because we all get so depressed. Okay, now, Joanna, can you give us a snapshot of migrant care workers? This is a really interesting area. In the article you co-authored and which has just come out in the University of New South Wales Law Journal, you say that the worldwide pattern of migration of care workers from poor countries to rich countries is well entrenched. Yet in Australia, that hasn't been our tradition. I must say, I've noticed quite a lot of migrant care workers around, but talk to that.
So in that paper that we've produced for the UNSW Law Journal, what we argue is that Australia has a variety of doors to its migration program. There's a front door, which most people know as the 457 visa, which Prime Minister Turnbull abolished and called the temporary skill shortage visa. So that's the front door. It brings in temporary skilled migrants to work in Australia where there's areas of shortage. That front door is closed to the care industry in that nurses can come in, but frontline care workers who work in aged care, personal care, childcare, they cannot come in through that front door. And what our research has shown is that employers are using side door and back door pathways to get overseas workers into the labour market. So international students, working holiday makers and temporary migrants on partner visas. So they're accompanying a skilled worker and they're the spouse of that worker, and then they're finding their way into the care sector. So you're completely right, Philip, that there are a lot of overseas born migrants or temporary migrants who are in the care industry, but they are there through a side door or a back door. And what our research shows is that this creates a tremendous amount of precarity or vulnerability for these workers when they're in the labour market, because they're on a side door or back door visa, and they don't have the same protections, if you like, that happen when you come through the front door. If you're entering the labour market through a side door or back door, then the Department of Immigration doesn't know where you are in the labour market, but they also they can't monitor the conditions to the same extent, and these workers often have a desire for further stay, and so they will put up with poorer wages and conditions or even extreme wage theft in order to stay in the care sector.
Well, let's remind ourselves that care workers will be in the spotlight because of the Royal Commission into Aged Care, another commission, Royal Commission, promised into disability care. All sorts of problems with the delivery of the NDIS. Heavens above.
And one of the problems here, Philip, is that if we just open up the front door, we will have a lot of migrant care workers coming in, but that will depress wages and conditions in that industry. So the bigger question for Australia is really to rethink its reliance on temporary labour migration and these side door, back door, front door pathways, and to consider an industry like the care industry, which is not seasonal work. It's 12 months of the year, and while the work is physically demanding and arduous, if it had the correct pay and conditions, and if the industry worked together to have more sophisticated HR techniques around retention and training, then there would likely be a greater pool of local Australian workers who want to do this kind of work. The care industry is an industry of the future that, you know, because everybody gets older and everybody needs care at some point, and thus it shouldn't necessarily be a revolving door of temporary migrants on a suite of different visas. And that's the bigger, deeper question that policymakers find it really difficult to grapple with.
Well, it sounds as though working in the Department of Immigration is involved juggling a great many plates or constantly fiddling with a Rubik's Cube.
It did feel like that while I was there, Philip. That's true. And it is a bit like that. Joanna's generally right, and I agree with her, that a lot of these people are working in the care industry or are likely to be working in the care industry. I would, however, caution against using words like backdoor and side door, because that tends to demonise the individuals concerned, and I think we should avoid that. I think there has been some, indeed a lot, of demonising of temporary entrants in recent times, and that, I think, is a dangerous pathway, and I think it's a pathway both sides of politics have taken, and they should really avoid that.
And I want to be clear, Philip, that that is not our research team's thinking behind using those phrases. I think that migrants will come in any way that they can into this country. So, for example, you know, my father was an immigrant and brought us over from India via England to Australia so that he could be an IT worker in the economy in the late 1980s. And I'm so grateful for that immigration journey. But the big difference between then and now is he was able to come on a permanent visa to meet a labour market need. And so the front door was open, and that was designed by the Australian government, and it gave my father security in the labour market. But, you know, 12 months later when he passed away, my mother didn't have to get her spouse visa cancelled and all of us get shipped back overseas. We actually were allowed to stay in Australia and make it our home because of that permanent visa that he was on. Temporary migrants who come in now don't have any of that security. And, you know, there's been large-scale surveys and exposés around the wage theft. You know, a recent one by Laurie Berg and Bettina Farben-Bloom topped it at over $1 billion, the level of wage underpayments that are owed to temporary migrant workers in Australia. And it is because we have a very complex and poorly designed system of doors. And that's not to demonise the temporary migrants that are coming in. They're coming in through any door that they can because they want to be in our labour market. It's a fantastic country to live in. We have, you know, one of the highest wages in the world, good labour market conditions because of our history of unionism and the safety net. But equally, the system is not working when we have, you know, this extent of wage underpayments, and we do need to rethink that reliance on temporary labour migration at the expense of the permanent program.
Abul Rizvi, I don't think your family is English. It does, you know, there's a certain exotic sound of the name. Which door did your mob come through?
My mob came through a door that was opened by Harold Holt and Hubert Opperman in 1966. We were a family of six that migrated when Hubert Opperman opened up migration by non-Europeans for the first time.
Well, good on him.
1966.
Good on him. He didn't just ride a bicycle.
No. The man had other talents.
Okay. Now, I have to say...
If I might just say...
Blaze away.
Yeah. I mean, Joanna is absolutely right about wage theft, but I think we've got to be careful in how we describe the system and where it's going wrong. The people who are in the, or maybe working in the care industry or in a variety of jobs around Australia, are going to be, on the statistics, they're going to be more likely to be either overseas students. Now, I assume we're not saying, as Pauline Hanson is suggesting, that we are going to withdraw their work rights. Secondly, we're talking about working holiday makers, and I assume we're not saying we're going to withdraw their work rights. And we're talking about the spouses of temporary entrants. And I assume we're not saying, as Mr. Trump is suggesting, to withdraw their work rights. So before we start criticising the doors, let's understand who we're talking about and what's possible in this space, because I think the risk is the demonisation of temporary entrants leads to real problems unless we think through what we are saying.
When I'm not sitting in a studio in the ABC, I am in fact a farmer, and the entire rural industry, or industries plural, depends on a lot of short-term labour, and we become aware of the terrible exploitation of many of the people in various categories that do time on farms. Heavens above, we've had to introduce anti-slavery legislation in Australia, haven't we?
Yes. And Joanna is absolutely right in respect of the wage theft and the exploitation. And I think we have a fundamental problem in that space, where governments have failed to act properly.
Back to you, Joanna.
To deal with it.
So, look, I think one of the challenges with these types of visas for international students and working holiday makers is that often the employer wears two hats almost, employer plus immigration sponsor or accommodation provider if the work is, you know, in regional areas on a farm. So, you know, and sometimes these immigration restrictions create pressures on workers to accept conditions that they wouldn't necessarily accept ordinarily. So if we take international students, of course, no one wants to agree with Pauline Hanson on the fact that the door should be shut to the world.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but an awful lot of people do want to agree with Pauline
They
Hanson.
Do, but in this conversation between the three of us, and I'm sure your dear listeners, Philip, we're probably all on the same page in recognising that what makes Australia great is its multiculturalism. But with international students, we take them as a case study. They have that limit that they can only work in semester for 40 hours a fortnight. And research that I've done and others have done has shown that that hard limit and that hard consequence of deportation and visa cancellation for breaching it, it can result in really awful situations occurring and students putting up with terrible conditions at work because they don't want to complain about exploitation. And, you know, one case I looked at was this wonderful young woman who was working in a hotel while she was a student, and she was cleaning the hotel room, and guests would check out, you know, 5 minutes, half an hour late, an hour late, and in order to keep her job, she had to stay and clean those hotel rooms. But that made her go over the limit. So she was working 41 hours one fortnight, 39 hours another, and 42 hours another fortnight. And when she said to her employer, "I need to be able to do 40 hours a fortnight," the employer said, "Well, you can find another job then." But she ended up getting her visa cancelled and getting deported because she was in breach of that condition. And that's the kind of situation that really scares international students, because this was a straight-A student that was doing wonderfully, and her family had invested in her immigration journey so that she could study in Australia. But those kind of immigration rules, they produce precarity for workers because they've got that tie, you know, to a migration outcome, to their study and to their work, and it creates extra vulnerabilities that local students working in a hotel simply don't have.
Abul, right of reply.
A couple of things to be said on that. I am surprised anyone, certainly when I was running the migration program, it was very rare for anyone to be have their visa cancelled because they were one hour over the limit. It was very rare. I mean, the culture may have changed and maybe their approach is different, but we always allowed for a fair amount of flexibility around that rule. And it was only where someone repeatedly and egregiously broke the rules that their visa would be cancelled. So certainly I would agree with Joanna that we need to go back, if we have moved in that space, go back to being a little more flexible and a little more accommodating in regard to that rule.
We've got to wind up soon, so I'm going to put the same question to both of you. First of all, to you, Joanna, what do you expect is going to happen on immigration policies during this election?
So we know that immigration has now become a really hot button issue. And what I hope doesn't happen is that migrants get demonised. I really hope that that doesn't happen in this election. I think there will be an increased emphasis on regional growth from migration and incentives to move migrants to the regions. And I think as someone that comes from South Australia, that is a really important policy. And we need to be relying on migrants for that regional growth and creating opportunities for them. But I also hope that in this election, we do start thinking about this two-step, three-step migration process, the try-before-you-buy approach, whereby migrants come in on these side door and back door visas. That's not their fault, but it's the way the system's designed. They come in as students or backpackers, they do these jobs, and then they ultimately maybe get employer sponsorship to stay on a further stay visa. I hope that we get to a place where we start to question the consequences of that approach and to revisit whether we want a greater reliance on permanent migration as opposed to temporary.
Bill, before I close the door on this conversation, is there much difference between the major parties?
Probably not right now, but really there is a host of immigration-related issues which an incoming government will have to deal with, which are really, really quite significant. But I'm not sure either party is at the moment ready to deal with them.
Lady and gentlemen, that's the lot for now. Thank you, Abel Rivsky, commentator, writer and former Deputy Secretary of the Department of Immigration. And thank you, Joanna Howe, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Adelaide.